Well, today is Friday, June 7th, 2013. I'm in Jackson Library with Dorothy Moore Duncan, class of 69, and we're here to conduct an oral history interview for the UNCG Institutional Memory Collections African American Institutional Memory Project. Thank you so much for coming all the way to Philadelphia to visit us today, and we're glad to have you on campus again.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Look at the interview. The interview started by my asking you something about your childhood, when and where you were born, a little bit about your family.
I was born in 1948 in a small town called Roland, North Carolina, near the South Carolina border. That's in Robeson County. I am the third of four children. I have two older sisters and a younger brother. My parents were school teachers, and they both taught in the public school system, initially in Robeson County. Mm-hmm. And we moved when I was a third grader, I think, to Montgomery County, where my mother taught school, and my father taught school in Wadesboro, North Carolina. And I graduated from high school at Peabody High School in Troy, North Carolina. And of course, undergraduate school here at UNC.
And what did your parents teach? High school, elementary?
My father taught high school, and my mother taught elementary school. My mother ended up being the superintendent of the elementary school for Montgomery County. As a matter of fact, my mother was one of the first teachers that desegregated the teaching staff at the schools. Mm-hmm. She was moved from Peabody Elementary School over to what then was the predominantly white elementary school in Troy. She taught reading and some other special projects that I don't remember, and then thereafter she became the superintendent of the elementary education.
I assume that education was always very important to your family.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've said before, it's my parents' philosophy was it wasn't a question of if you went to college, it was which college are you going to attend. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was very important.
Right. And when you chose UNCG, what did they think about that?
You know, they didn't say anything much about the selection of UNCG. Mm-hmm. One backstory is my father attended A&T, and when he was a student there, he used to work at what was Women's College at the time. He used to work here. Now, doing what? I'm sure he probably told me, I just don't remember what it was now, but I think he was happy I was attending here, and I think my mom didn't express any view one way or the other, as long as it was a school that I was happy with the choice.
And what were the circumstances around why you chose to come here as opposed to A&T, perhaps, or Bennett College, or Shaw, or historically black school?
I think surprisingly, when you mentioned Bennett, I attended Bennett during high school. They had what was called the Saturday School. And you would take the regular college courses at Bennett, and if you chose to attend Bennett, they would give you credit for those courses you'd taken at the Saturday School. And I had attended the Saturday School for at least two, maybe 3 years. I'm not quite sure how many years now. By the time I finished high school, I think I had been at Bennett long enough. At least that's the perception of a 17-year-old. And I didn't want to go to Bennett. I didn't want to go to A&T because my dad had gone to A&T. All kind of superficial things that a 17-year-old thinks about. And it was close to home. And when I expressed the desire to go someplace further from home, my dad said, yeah, well, okay, that's fine, but you come home once a year. And so, I don't know whether I can say it was UNCG by default, but it was also the era of when schools were becoming desegregated. Mm-hmm. And it was at a time when you were looking for what we deemed at that moment a quality education. Mm-hmm. And this was one of the very good schools in the area.
Right. Now, when you got here, it had already been integrated a few years, and men were accepted and came in the fall of 64. So, but it still had a lot of traditions of women's college, I assume, by the time you got here.
Well, I came in 1965.
Okay.
And yes, there were still a lot of traditions. I think there were very few males mm-hmm. on campus. They were, by and large, town students, I guess mm-hmm. is what right. we used to designate then. And they didn't have any, I don't think they had dorms available for male students at the time.
I think they had one.
Maybe so.
Just very few.
Very few.
Yeah.
And I can only remember three African American men mm-hmm. at the time who were here.
There's Charles Cole.
Yes.
Larry McAdoo.
Yeah.
And I think
John, and I can't remember his last name.
I think it was Reginald. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But you have, there were very few white guys on campus, and even fewer African American guys.
Exactly.
It was just almost unheard of. Well, what was it like growing up in the late 1950s and early 1960s in North Carolina?
It was very segregated. Mm-hmm. I grew up in small rural communities. In Robeson County, it was primarily made up of African Americans, whites, and Indians. And it was a farming community. And so it wasn't, in that sense, very prosperous. I have to, now it's really a poor community because a lot of the farming is not done there anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I think when I go back to Robeson County, it's very sad that there's nothing, no industry there, no jobs mm-hmm. there for people. Growing up in Troy, which was a little more populated, but the population of the town probably maybe 3,500 people or maybe a little more than that. Again, it's a segregated community. Mm-hmm. Black folk lived on one side of town, white folk lived on the other side of town, and never the twain should meet. Mm-hmm. It seems to be different now. And you have not only African Americans and whites, you have an Asian population, and you also have a Hispanic population. And that's very different from what it was when I grew up. Mm-hmm. You know, if I can go back for a minute, when I was a child in Robeson County, we used to have a lot of, because it wasn't such a large farming community, a lot of migrant labor mm-hmm. coming through Rowan. I don't know when that migrant labor stopped coming through there, but, you know, maybe it was when the industry, the farming industry, started to slow down. I guess mm-hmm. there was no need for a lot of migrant labor. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my parents owned the farm, so we worked on the farm, even though they taught school. We worked on the farm, and so we did things like harvesting tobacco, picking cotton, picking tomatoes, those kinds of things. But and they used migrant labor also, but again, I don't know when all that stopped.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that there's very little bit of no industry down there, so I'm assuming it's still very rural and agricultural.
Is that... In Roland, it is mm-hmm. still rural and it's still agricultural, but it seems to be a combination of farms now. Mm-hmm. And unless you have, I think, a contract with a tobacco company, I don't know that tobacco is planted in such great numbers mm-hmm. anymore. I see soybeans mm-hmm. when I go down there, but, you know, I get down there infrequently, and mm-hmm. so I'm not down there in the summer when most of mm-hmm. the growing would happen. So I'm not quite sure what they do in that area anymore. Mm-hmm. I just know it. When I look around at people, they don't seem to have an mm-hmm. employment. In around the Troy area, there used to be a lot of textile mm-hmm. Places, mm-hmm. and those are no longer there right. either. There used to be like furniture places in the, of course, in the High Point area.
Mm-hmm.
That right. seems not to be right. there anymore. All of those things seem to have gone offshore.
We have lost so much of that in the last 10, 15 years. Yeah. Textiles have moved overseas.
Yeah.
Furniture, well, some furniture is still made, but a lot of that's gone.
Oh,
yes, right.
And in Troy, it looks like it's a lot of, you know, service industry. There's healthcare, some healthcare institutions mm-hmm. around now, like some nursing homes and mm-hmm. hospitals. Right. So you have that, but I don't see a lot else mm-hmm. around that area.
I know so many of the rural areas here in North Carolina have really suffered.
Yeah.
A lot of poverty and that sort of thing,
which is
a shame.
It truly is.
Yeah, and it's particularly in the eastern part of North Carolina, the southeastern. It's terrible. Yeah. Well, when you were in high school, do you recall what your favorite subjects were?
Yeah, it was probably biology, mm-hmm. chemistry, mm-hmm. math.
And were you going to major in anything specific in high school? I mean, I'm sorry, in college when you got here.
As a matter of fact, I started off as a biology major and took the basic biology mm-hmm. course and said, I don't think so. and I switched my major to political science.
Oh, very quickly.
It didn't take long.
So was it just political science or political science and history?
I think it was just political science.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't do a double major or a minor. Mm-hmm. And if I did a minor, I don't remember. Okay.
Oh, gosh. Well, what do you recall about your first days on campus? I guess the fall of 65, you said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit scary. But I guess it is for anybody who's starting out on a new path. Mm-hmm.
Had you been to campus prior to that?
I don't think I did. I don't think I came to mm-hmm. campus before that.
Mm-hmm.
So my first day was my first day.
Mm-hmm.
My roommate, my freshman year, is it okay to use names?
Oh, yes.
Sure. Alice McCullum. And so when I walked in the room that day, she introduced herself, and she was crying because her parents had dropped her off at college and left. It's funny that, and maybe one of your prior interviewees has told you that there were five of us during the course of that time who bonded and have remained friends mm-hmm. from 1965 to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And Alice is one of those mm-hmm. people that I bonded with, or one of the five mm-hmm. that I bonded with during that time period. We were roommates that freshman year. We weren't roommates after
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
But the friendship has lasted. She's now a probate court judge in Dayton, Ohio.
Mm-hmm. And which dorm were you in? And were all the black students in one dorm, or how did that work?
No, all the black students were not in one dorm, but the university seemed to have gone into great pains to make sure that the black students were rooming together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that, you know, there was one student who's, and they were, we were required to submit photos
mm-hmm.
with your application. Yeah. And one of the young women's photos, she was very fair. And so I think they thought she was not African American. So
mm-hmm.
she was put in a room with two other young women
mm-hmm.
and who happened to have been white. And when they discovered the error, it was, oops, the computer made a mistake. And she was moved into a room with two African-American freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have that problem because I was paired with Alice. Mm-hmm. But as I said, I think that there was malice aforethought in who to
mm-hmm.
put
right.
as roommates.
Right.
But we were not all in the same dorm.
Right. So you just had one roommate, and not there were not two other
no,
students.
No, I had just one
the
roommate.
One.
And I was in Coit
mm-hmm.
Hall.
I guess you've heard that Coit has been, well, all the Quad has been renovated.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah. Maybe get a chance to see it afterwards if it's not raining too much. They've done a beautiful job.
Oh, great.
Very nice. So Who was your roommate in subsequent years, sophomore?
My sophomore year was Thomasine Oliver. And my junior and senior year was Cynthia Inman. Well, it was Farrell at the time, right. Cynthia Farrell.
And did you enjoy having these roommates?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. I mean they were great. It's like roommates. Every now and then you had a little tiff, but it's like sisters.
That's right.
You know, you have an argument, you get over it.
That's right. Oh my gosh. Well, was it much of a transition for you from high school in southeastern North Carolina to a sort of an urban school like UNCG?
No, it wasn't, because I had gone to Bennett. My mm-hmm. mom or my dad, one of the two, mostly my mom, I think, would bring me up on Saturday mornings, and mm-hmm. I'd be here all day. Mm-hmm. There were summer programs that mm-hmm. My parents insisted that we attend some sort of summer program. They gave us a choice. Either you worked or you found a summer program to attend. So my sisters, my brother and I, too, used to attend things like the National Science Foundation Institute. Bennett would have a summer program. I think I probably attended a Bennett program. So in those programs, you'd have to live in the dorm for mm-hmm. either 6 weeks or 4 weeks. So we attended programs like mm-hmm. that. My parents, one summer, sent one of my older sisters and I to Cincinnati, and we took summer school courses at a high school in Cincinnati mm-hmm. with my aunt. And so we do things like that. So it wasn't mm-hmm. that big a transition.
Well, you said that biology was your favorite program mm-hmm. when you were in high school, and you sort of changed your mind once you got here
yeah.
to political science. How did you discover political science?
Well, you ask a good question, and I have not a clue. I don't know how I discovered political science. I can only remember that my advisor was a political science professor, mm-hmm. and that was, I don't know whether she's still here or not, was Margaret Hunt.
I've heard the name.
Yeah.
Well, maybe she influenced you.
I wish I could say I remember. I honestly do not, but that's altogether possible.
So did you take a political science course in your freshman year, or was that something you took maybe starting your sophomore year?
Oh, you test my memory.
Somewhere along the way.
I'm sure I may have. I just really yeah. don't remember.
But so that must have piqued your interest once you got into this particular field.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. At least I graduated with a BA in political science. And then after that, law school.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that was a good course to take, sounds like.
Well, you know, now that I have practiced for the number of years that I have, I would, if I could step back with the knowledge I have now, I would not have majored in political science, because I now conclude that the better path, if you wanted to go to law school, would be courses in logic or math, even music, because it teaches your brain to think in a different manner. And so I think that's, and even the sciences, I think, would have been a good course mm-hmm. of study if you wanted to go to law school. Mm-hmm. Now, Alice said that when I walked into the room that first day, I said I wanted to go to law school. I don't remember that, but she says I did, and so I have no reason to doubt her. And so maybe that was the path I was thinking about mm-hmm. to begin with. I really don't know.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Well, we've already touched on this a little bit. Living in the dorm, what was it like living in the dorms in the mid-1960s? This is in relationship to rules and regulations and things like that.
We had curfews. I guess I didn't find any problem living in the dorms during the 60s. As a matter of fact, I guess I'm conservative in the sense that I think rules are a good thing for youngsters. Because I think sometimes when you have a little too much freedom and you don't know how to control that, you get out of control.
Did you have rules and regulations at home?
Oh, absolutely. No, you were not free to do what you wanted, when you wanted, where you wanted. Not if you wanted to live to see the next day.
Oh. And what about the dining hall food? What are your recollections of the dining hall food?
I just remember that the food in the dining hall was wonderful. It was whoever was in the back cooking was doing a tremendous job.
So you always got enough food?
Always got enough food, and despite what people might say about institutional food, the institutional food at the time that I was here was great.
And what about social activities? Did you participate in social activities on campus, or did you have to go over to A&T to participate, or to Bennett to participate?
We went over to A&T to participate in social activities. I mean, there were some things that I remember that, only one thing in particular, Dionne Warwick used to come for a concert here every annual, and I would go to that concert. And there were one or two other things. Sometimes at the Neo Black Society might have been sponsoring something, I probably attended that. But by and large, we went over to A&T.
Well, speaking of the Neo Black Society, were you a founding member by any chance?
No, I wasn't. I was here when it got started because it was in its infancy
right,
at the time.
'68.
Yeah, and so I attended functions, but in terms of any role in terms of being an officer or anything, I don't recall that I did any of that.
But did you actually join?
Yeah, I was a member.
Okay.
But not in any leadership capacity.
Do you remember Betty Cheek?
I do remember Betty and her sister
Yvonne,
because they were upperclassmen at the time we were here. But I'm sure I haven't seen either one of them since I was here.
But they both live in Minneapolis, and I interviewed them about a year ago. And they promised me there's going to be a 45th anniversary for the Neo Black Society celebration this fall, and they promised they'd come back. Well, this is all gearing up to the 50th anniversary, which is coming up in about 5 years.
Oh, how nice!
So anyway,
that's very nice.
Yeah. So hopefully they'll be able to make it because they're still working part time.
Okay.
Consultants and that sort of thing. Well, what about extracurricular activities on campus? Intramurals and.
I don't
sports
think
sports and that sort of thing.
No, I you know, it's just class.
And did you work on campus by any chance?
No, I did not have to work during the time I was an undergraduate. I was fortunate.
Well, school's a full-time job.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I was fortunate that my parents could, and I'm sure they struggled, but that they could pay tuition and give me spending money.
And what do you recall about campus traditions such as Rat Day, Jacket Day, Ring Day?
I remember Jacket Day. As a matter of fact, I still have my jacket. I found it in a closet.
Is it still in good shape, or?
Surprisingly, it was, and I had it cleaned just because I found it that day, so I could show it to my daughter. And I remember Rat Day, and I remember Ring Day.
What, do you recall any specific things about those days that stick in your mind?
No, just the only ones, the only thing I really do remember is, and I'm not sure with what precision, is Jacket Day, because our jackets were navy blue, and others were camel, and I think green. And I know there was another color.
Red.
Yeah, okay.
Right. And it rotated every 4 years.
Yes. That I remember. And there was a ceremony associated with Jacket Day.
Right.
But that's about all. Rat Day, I think, was just kind of fun.
It was a hazing
event.
incoming freshmen were required to put on like little rat ears, and they had to obey any kind of rules sophomores would tell them.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing, like bow down to me, or if you met a, I understand if you met a male professor on campus, you'd had to sometimes ask the male professor to marry you or something.
Oh, yeah. And I remember some of the activities took place on the quad, but that's about all. It's been too many years.
Now, what about the junior show? Did you participate in that when you were a junior?
I doubt it. At least if I did, I have no memory of it.
And do you recall the daisy chain when you graduated? Whether you had two lines of, I think they were maybe juniors or sophomores, who would hold this huge chain of daisies and ivy, and the seniors would march through them to just the commencement ceremony.
I do not. I remember on graduation day, it was hot, and that George McGovern was the speaker, and that's all I remember. I don't remember, you know, that was a haze. I got through that day, and then my parents were there, and right after graduation exercises, we left and went back home because that summer I was going to a program at Wayne State University in Detroit that was recruiting law students. And so I went home that day, and I left shortly after that to go to Wayne State. Mm-hmm. So that day was a haze.
And you're probably grateful that I finished all that.
That was exactly what it was. Yeah. That phase is over with, now on to the next thing.
Well, tell me about this program at Wayne State.
That was called the CLEO program. CLEO is an acronym for Council on Legal Education Opportunity. And I think that program still exists. It's to recruit minority students to go to law school. And so we were, and Alice also, I went to Wayne State, and Alice went to the University of Cincinnati in the same program, because these programs were all over the country.
And how did you find out about this?
You know, a young man who had gone to Carolina, I think, talked to us about going to law school and attending the CLEO program. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how I found out about it. He was an African-American student at Carolina. And maybe he had finished Carolina, and maybe he had gone to the CLEO program.
So he came to campus and spoke.
I don't know whether he was at campus and spoke, or whether he was a friend of some of the women on campus, and he just happened to be talking about it. He might have been from Durham, which is where Alice was from, and maybe he talked to Alice about it, and the two of us. I don't remember the particulars, but I think that's how we found out about the CLEO program.
When did you realize that you wanted to become a lawyer?
Well, Alice said I said it my freshman year.
But you didn't know about it.
I didn't know about it until I probably got close to my senior year, and I didn't know whether I wanted to go immediately or not, but after undergraduate school, I had done some interviewing, and I'd gotten a job offer to work in New York, and I was going to be sharing an apartment with someone in Yonkers, and going to New York absolutely scared me to death. And when I got accepted in the CLEO program, I said, well, that's it. I'm not going to Yonkers. I'm going to the CLEO program.
And was this CLEO program all summer long?
Yes. Okay. It was 6 or 8
six
weeks.
Six. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what did it? What did you learn there?
It was kind of a precursor to law school. Mm-hmm. So you would take law school courses. Oh. You take exams. And so it was to kind of introduce you to what law school would be all about. Mm-hmm. Teach you study habits, how to brief a case, those kinds of things that you don't know until you walk through a law school door.
Okay. And then I guess you decided after taking these CLIO program that you were going to law school.
I did. Right. And I applied, I don't know how many law schools I applied to, but I got a call from Peter Leocourse, who was a professor at Temple's Law School, who subsequently became Dean of Temple Law School and then the president of the university. So Peter recruited me to go to Temple, as mm-hmm. well as some other students from CLIO programs, mm-hmm. not the one that I attended, but mm-hmm. in other parts of the country.
So you went that fall?
Yes, I went to Temple that fall.
Wow.
The spelling of his last name is Liacourse.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
And what was law school like for you?
I hated law school. I think probably most people do.
Mm-hmm.
It was reading. It was analyzing. It consumed the entirety of your life. But you get through it. And so if you're committed to it, it's like anything else. Mm-hmm. You don't have to love it. You have to do it because that's your craft.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you did that for 3 years.
Yes.
The correct line.
Yeah.
And then after you graduated, what was the next step for you?
I started, I took the bar exam mm-hmm. in Pennsylvania. And I took a bar review course before that. And I finished the bar exam on a Thursday. And I started working for the National Labor Relations Board on that Monday. And I started there as a field attorney.
In Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia.
So you never had a desire to come back to North Carolina to practice?
No, but I still might do that because I've now retired.
Mm.
I worked for the National Labor Relations Board a total of 40 and one half years.
Wow.
And the last 15 years, I was the regional director for the Philadelphia office of the National Labor Relations Board. And we covered eastern Pennsylvania, southern New Jersey, and northern Delaware. That was the geographical area covered mm-hmm. by the Philadelphia regional office. It is in this eastern megalopolis. It was one of the more important offices on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
You got difficult cases, big cases,
mm-hmm.
And so it was what I call the labor of love, and I loved working for the National Labor Relations Board.
Now, is that a governmental agency or?
It's a federal agency.
Federal agency.
Okay. Yeah. It's it regulates relationships between unions, employers, and mm-hmm. employees, and mm-hmm. administers one statute, the National Labor Relations Act.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do too much philosophizing, but it gives employees the right to join unions mm-hmm. and to organize on behalf of unions, or to refrain from doing that, or to engage in activities for mutual aid and protection. And a lot of employees don't know they have the rights to do that. And so mm-hmm. this statute protects employees' rights to engage in that activity. Mm-hmm. Employers have rights and unions have rights.
Mm-hmm.
And so my job as regional director was to head that office, which was an office, we ranged from 70 to 50 attorneys and field examiners. Our field examiners were non-attorneys who did the same kind of work that our attorneys did, mm-hmm. except the formal legal work. So
mm-hmm.
it was to manage and run that office and make decisions as to whether people committed unfair labor practices or not, and to conduct elections to determine whether employees wanted to have union representation.
So did you appear in court or did you work behind the scenes?
Well, I did both. When
mm-hmm.
I started, I did investigations and litigation. Uh-huh. And when I ended, I headed the office.
So you had quite a few people working for you, supervised yes. quite a few.
Yes. We had a staff of 70.
Wow.
It ranged from 70 to 50.
Mm-hmm.
In times of a budgetary difficulty, or if mm-hmm. the case intake dropped, mm-hmm. then we usually lose people by attrition. Sometimes people mm-hmm. just took jobs in the private sector.
Right. You never thought about starting your own law firm?
Nobody ever made me an offer. I couldn't refuse. I happened to have liked mm-hmm. being a neutral,
mm-hmm.
and that's what the National Labor Relations mm-hmm. Board was. It's a, mm-hmm. it's a neutral agency.
Sounds great. Well, if we can backtrack to UNCG for just a minute.
Sure.
I think we've already touched on this a little bit. When you came in the mid-60s, there were very few men on campus. Do you have any recollections specifically about some of the African-American men on campus? We've already mentioned their names, but did you ever have any classes with them? Or?
I don't think so. No. I don't think mm-hmm. any of them were political science majors, mm-hmm. and I don't think, well, I think Charles might have been in my class.
Mm.
I think Larry was ahead of me, and you mentioned whether it was John or Reginald.
Right.
I don't remember whether he was in the class of 69 or before or after.
I can't remember either. He's either 69 or 70.
Okay. I don't remember having any class with
right.
either of those.
Okay, right. Well, what was the political life or political atmosphere like on campus in the 60s? Do you have any recollection of that?
I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
I must confess, when I came to UNCG, I was 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And through the eyes of a 17-year-old, which means I finished here when I turned 17 just before I
mm-hmm.
came. And so by the time I left, would turn 21 that summer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So during that 17 to 20, 21-year period, I think your vision is not particularly
right.
astute.
Well, in the time that you were here, so many of the things like the Greensboro sit-ins that already taken place in 1960, there was some protests on Tay Street in 63 to integrate the theater over there and the shops and that sort of thing, so you missed all that. And then there was an ARA strike on campus. Do you have any recollection of that? That was in 69.
No.
And I can't remember if that might have been after you left, because I can't remember what time of the year that happened.
I don't remember a strike when I was here, only on campus.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember a strike at Gilbarco.
Okay.
And there was a trash strike. Trash haul strike
mm-hmm.
in Greensboro.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first time I'd ever heard anything about unions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe that might have piqued my interest
mm-hmm.
in unionization when I
mm-hmm.
went to law school, other than taking a course.
Mm-hmm.
There were some riots when Dr. King was killed.
Right.
And we got calls, at least some of us got calls, and I don't remember whether I specifically, a word just spread around campus from A&T saying, you guys get out of there because we're coming over that way next. And so, but the university, because of the riots, I think, shut down until everybody
mm-hmm.
got home,
mm-hmm.
if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Of course, that happened in 68, and there were so many assassinations during the 60s, you know, starting with President John F. Kennedy, just
sure.
seemed like it never ended.
Right.
Do you have any recollections of that series of assassinations and all that turmoil that was going on in the 60s?
Just, at least on campus,
mm-hmm.
just the King assassination
right.
On campus. I remember when Kennedy was assassinated, was before I came.
You were still in high school.
I was still in high school at the time. Now in hindsight, perceive McGovern as a pacifist,
mm-hmm.
but I really don't remember the content of his speech
mm-hmm.
for graduation. So in terms of the political atmosphere, other than just very much generalizations,
mm-hmm.
I can't give you anything specific.
We've already talked about the Negro Black Society, which was founded in 68, about the time you're getting ready to leave, really.
Yes.
You graduated just a few. Do you have any specific recollections about the Negro Black Society, what they were involved in and what they were trying to do at that time when they were getting started?
No, other than just as a general matter, it was kind of a camaraderie and a kind of safe place for African-American students to promote, I hate to say, our general welfare, because there was an air of discrimination, and there's nothing specific that I can tell you about except Black students were not wanted on campus. Mm-hmm. And there were some people, I don't know that anything specifically happened to me, but for others it was made very clear, sometimes by professors, sometimes by other students, that you were not welcome.
Mm-hmm. But you never had anything specifically aimed toward you?
Other than this one class that I had where, and as I said, a professor, it's some remark that was denigrating African Americans, and a white student in class spoke up and said, you know that's not right, and whoever she was looked at me and said, hey, help me out here, you know what he's saying isn't right. And that's where my memory shuts down. I don't remember what happened after that. That's the one specific that I can tell you about. But it was a generalized atmosphere of not wanting African-American students here. Mm-hmm.
Do you recall Ada Fisher, class of 70, by any chance? Dr. Ada Fisher?
Vaguely, yeah, I do.
Because she was a real leader. She talked to Chancellor Ferguson about some situations on campus, and I think they worked some things out. So she was a very active, true activist on campus.
You know, I can't dispute it. What? It's been 40-some years.
if you were asking me these questions, I'd say,
Well, and that's why I tell you, sometimes I don't have, and I, you know, over the course of the years, you learn not to misstate.
Mm-hmm.
And if your memory is vague, it is what it is.
And as
I mature, it gets vaguer and vaguer.
<That's right. laughs> Well, I just mentioned the Chancellor Ferguson, who was the chancellor while you were here. Do you have any recollection of him, ever meeting him?
I would see him around campus.
Right, but no.
No.
What about Vice Chancellor Merritt Mossman? Or any of the other administrators?
Oh, gee, I remember the name, but
it was actually a building on campus named in her honor.
Yeah, but in terms of meeting her, I really don't have any recollection of that.
And there was a very famous dean of students. Her name was Catherine Taylor, who was actually a graduate of the school.
I remember the name.
Right.
Yeah, but that's about it.
Well, can you tell me anything about some of your professors that you can recall? Do you have any specific memories? Even your professors?
Other than Dr. Hunt, that's the only one I can really recall. And I did have a male professor, who was a retired attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And he taught, I think, maybe a history course or a political science course. I don't remember, but I don't recall his name.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the only two that I can recall.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was impressed by the fact that he was a retired attorney, and that he was now teaching at an undergraduate school. And it was a disconnect. I couldn't figure out why, but I don't think I ever asked the question. I now see that lawyers do all kinds of things. So,
well, after you graduated, I know you went on to law school and you worked for the National Labor Relations Board for all these years. And you say you just retired recently?
Yes.
Okay. So, what are your future plans?
I don't know. I have just finished my last commitment about 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I think I have some time to kind of reflect and figure it out. I might do some arbitrations, I might do some mediations. I plan to get admitted to the North Carolina Bar because my family still owns a lot of real estate here. And I thought I should probably do that. I'd like to probably travel some.
Mm-hmm.
but I will find something to do because I don't want to do absolutely nothing, at least not right now.
That sort of makes sense for me.
Yeah, and I still, I teach a course in collective bargaining at Temple Law School, so, and I will do that again the spring semester. And so maybe I'll do some more teaching. I'm not quite sure yet.
So you think you'll stick around in the Philadelphia area?
That will always be my home base, but I will always come to North Carolina. You know, this is my roots, and it's also where I get rejuvenated. So I will be, I will always come back.
Well, have you been involved with UNCG since you graduated?
This is what my daughter applied for admission here, and it was accepted, but she decided not to come. And so I came back just that one time to bring her here when we were doing kind of a college tour. I think we probably stopped at every college and university between Pennsylvania and North Carolina for her to take a look at to see whether she wanted to apply. And other than that one occasion, this is the first time I have been back on campus since then.
Quite a few changes have occurred.
It's extraordinary.
Well, what do you want people to know about your time at UCG?
I don't know who to attribute the quote to. If it doesn't kill you, it'll make you stronger. It didn't kill me. It made me able to survive anything. I have made some lifelong friends here. And it has made me strong enough that in the labor relations field, it's a contentious field. And with decisions that I made as director of the Philadelphia office, somebody was always unhappy with that decision. Whether they were, they won, they were happy. If they lost, they were unhappy. And so it taught me an inner strength and a survival that I don't know that you learn in other ways. And so the strength and that I learned, because you have to depend on yourself, and the friends that I made to learn how to lean on them when I needed it, and that they were there, has been the two things that that's a takeaway from me. I would hope that other people who attend not only this university, but any university, would make the kind of friends that I made.
So it sounded like it had quite an impact on you.
Oh, it did. It did.
Well, I don't have any formal questions for you. Do you have anything you'd like to add that we haven't covered this afternoon?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
I really appreciate you coming all the way from Philadelphia on a rainy day. Okay, great.